Our third speaker is Dr. Nina Morano, who received her veterinary medical degree from the University of Georgia College of Veterinary Medicine, 1984. She practiced companion animal medicine in Atlanta, Georgia, and in 1997 returned to Emory University, where she received a master's degree in public health with a specialty in epidemiology. 1998, she joined the Foodborne and Diarrheal Diseases branch at CDC, where she managed the National Antimicrobial Resistance Monitoring System. She works on research on safety and effectiveness of the anthrax vaccine, as well as research to find new prevention and treatment measures for anthrax. In 2004 of this year, she was appointed Associate Director for Veterinary Medicine and Public Health, the National Center for Infectious Diseases, where she's responsible for exploring ways to increase partnerships and more fully integrate veterinary specialists into efforts to address emerging zoonotic diseases. Please help me welcome Dr. Morano.
Thank you very much for the very kind introduction, and I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me to speak with you today. As you know, I'm from Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and I think to summarize the responsibility of our agency, if you picture what we do as a cycle, we are responsible for conducting surveillance among the population for emerging infectious diseases, and of course other kinds of problems that affect people's health, environmental health, but in terms of emerging infectious diseases, we are poised to look for them in the community. Once we detect an outbreak, to study it, to respond to it, and to make recommendations for prevention and control. And then the cycle continues, and we continue our surveillance based on the new information. So with that, I'd like this morning to talk to you a little bit about how we do influenza surveillance in the United States, because you will see that as part of our concern about avian influenza, how we are drawing that into an enhanced surveillance mode, and some of the things that we have done to prepare ourselves for the possibility of a flu pandemic in which avian influenza has species jumped from animals into humans. So this season in the United States, domestic influenza, I'm sure you have read these newspaper accounts, quite a concern over a high perception of severity, a high number of deaths among children, a flu vaccine shortage. These were things that were in the newspapers all last fall and winter. And as we come to the next influenza season, we must be prepared to get a handle on this. So these were a little bit, a few of the issues that made this season so challenging, this past season. We expanded recommendations for vaccination among young children and also extended vaccination recommendations to the first trimester of pregnancy. That the season this past year did seem to start very early, and there was a lot of public and media concern about deaths among children, that there was a mismatch between the circulating strain and the vaccine strain that was available this past year. Again, perception of increased severity, a shortage of vaccine, and then you mix that in to the overriding concerns about avian influenza. So in the next few charts, I'm just going to show you some of these points. So I think I'll skip through this, but again, we had very early onset, high number of cases reported through all states by December 20th, and that there were a higher number of influenza-related deaths this past year than previous, but lower than for previous seasons in which the H3N2 viruses had circulated, and that there were high influenza attack rates among children and young adults. So we collect our influenza information from a series of providers around the United States, but our primary contacts are the state health departments in the 50 U.S. states and the U.S. territories. But in red, you can see where our data sources come from. And our influenza surveillance, this is what we do in the United States. So if there were a flu pandemic, this is exactly where the data would be pulled from. This first chart just shows that there were a very much higher number of cases, case reports in 2003, 2004, by December compared to previous years. I think 2003 is in red, and then the earlier years are in the other colors. This shows pediatric influenza-related mortality in the white and the yellow bars compared with virologic activity. So these, this red line would be the percentage of influenza-positive specimens, then with the lag period, followed by this are the case counts of influenza among children. Again, accounting for this mismatch, the in red are shown the actual numbers of cases of H3N2, which was not captured by the vaccine available in the 2003-2004 season. And in terms, I'd just like to show you this real briefly. Traditionally, in the United States, it's highly seasonal. And so we track this by weeks, and red is widespread evidence of influenza-like activity, and this was by December 20th. But you can see how quickly the picture changes over just a period of a few months. So where does that bring us to our concern, our mounting concern about avian influenza and the role that it can play in a pandemic? In early 2004, when we first became involved through WHO with responding to avian influenza in Southeast Asia, we put together in February a guidance for protection of persons involved in U.S. Avian influenza outbreaks. In other words, for people, we do have avian influenza outbreaks, low path avian influenza outbreaks in the United States every year, and this is not uncommon. But because of the increased media attention to what was happening in Southeast Asia, there was a lot of concern about how are we protecting our frontline. In this case, our frontline are poultry workers, people who work in the industry. So we put together this guideline for worker recommendations for protection. And these are very similar to the WHO guidelines that are appear on the WHO website. So contained within these are recommendations for use of personal protective equipment, vaccination for domestic influenza, use of antivirals if necessary, surveillance among poultry workers, and evaluation of workers who develop a febrile respiratory illness and history of contact with poultry. This is important because these are our front lines in terms of where this disease can be spread from, potentially from people who have direct contact with poultry. And in the United States, this would be poultry, people whose occupation is working around poultry. I want to show you just in the next two slides how our, we are mounting our surveillance for avian influenza. Our original recommendations for testing were among hospitalized patients that had a severe respiratory illness for which an alternate diagnosis had not been established, and history of travel to a country with documented H5N1 within 10 days previous. But recently, we've added for hospitalized or ambulatory patients with febrile illness and history of contact with poultry, and then extended it or made it more specific to visiting a farm, in a household raising poultry, or to a bird market. So they are these. The definitions are, this is how we mount our campaign to be able to detect it in the community. Our pandemic influenza preparedness plan has been released in August, and it's on the DHH, Department of Human Health and Human Services website. It's open for comment, and it can be accessed at this website. As the previous two speakers certainly have elucidated, our concern about proximity in Southeast Asia, and at least in the village setting of children and poultry, and then the potential in the mixing in the swine population. As part of the preparedness, the pandemic preparedness plan, this, about a week ago, Dr. Thompson announced that we have purchased, through contract, 2 million doses of H5N1 avian influenza vaccine to set aside initially to vaccinate laboratory workers and public health personnel, but if needed, the general public. So this is being set aside in reserve as part of the pandemic plan. A few minutes just to diverge away, because it's going to come into my final points. We, since 1999, we've had an integrated human and animal surveillance system in place called ARBONET. This is for West Nile virus surveillance. And we take data from states involving mosquitoes, evidence of mosquito activity, bird activity, mammals, including horses, and humans. And you can see on these maps that in most years, the evidence of the animal activity has preceded the evidence of the human activity. And you can see in here 2003. It will lead to my next recommendation, is we are very interested, and I was very pleased to see Dr. Lubroth's positioning slides of areas of human density with actual cases in where poultry had been detected. I think this is important that we work together with WHO, FAO, and OIE for an integrated human and animal surveillance network for avian influenza. Not so much about cases, but about surveillance of the isolates themselves. It's important to be able to document virologic activity among the animal species to be able to predict the likelihood of these isolates or these viral types being able to jump into humans. So we propose this idea of a swine surveillance system to detect antibody to H5 and to other influenza viruses, to be able to collect serum samples from swine, respiratory samples for virus isolation. We understand, of course, that there is much concern about divulging the identities of countries involved, so some sort of a plan would have to take into consideration protecting the country of origin, but that regional laboratories would be used for testing, but that the isolates themselves could be shared with WHO reference labs to look for evidence of reassortment in swine. You are aware of the very recent cluster of cases in which human-to-human transmission is suspected. So, we are very concerned about this, and all of the things I have described to you in the preceding slides are what we are trying to do in terms of preparedness. So, in my final slide, we must be prepared to face the next flu pandemic. We are making plans to protect workers, do surveillance in the population, infection control and prophylactic measures, vaccines, antivirals, key components to contain spread in the human population. But we look to our partners to help monitor what is going on in the animal side to be able to understand this better and be better prepared for an outbreak in humans. I want to thank my collaborators on this, and if you'd like to know a little bit more about what we do in terms of surveillance at CDC, you just go to our website and hit flu. Thank you very much.